I welcome you to this talk, is probably the wrong term, to this workshop about the Overpass API. The idea is that you can use some that you can use some at least of the basic features afterwards directly without trying to get it through the wizard. And hopefully understand the principle how you can build up more complex queries. As I already have told you, there is a documentation. It's still work in progress. It's just, I always thought, or more or less people thought, that writing a documentation is just a thing I could do on a rainy weekend. Unfortunately, it's not that case. So I expect it to be complete not before the end of the year. But let's start with some use cases. That's one we haven't seen yet. But I find it very, very helpful also for practical purpose. It's showing elements that are stacked vertical one over another. It's a problem that you usually have in a map that you cannot see if the things are just stacked vertically like you have in a shopping mall, railway station, university building, or so on. It's the closest building that has a tagging here to the situation here. It's this faculty here has no indoor mapping so far, but apparently the Pädagogische Hochschule has one. And they concentrated on making a useful user interface, a nice presentation, and making it helpful. And they loaded off all the work with the database, keeping the data up to date and so on the overpass by making a query each time when you open up this page. Then your browser makes in the background a query for the respective OpenStreetMap data that you need at that point to render indoor data, Another example. Client-side rendered maps. For example, in this case, I just decided I want to like a map of Essen, where we have often a biannual meeting from the local chapter of the German, for the local German chapter of Foskis, the so-called Heckwinkend of Foskis. And that's quite easy. For example, to print a primitive version of an annual poster of a map. You just download it, or Mapperative does it for you, and then in Mapperative you can do all the rendering and you can change the rules and you can get feedback on changing the rules of the rendering within rather a couple of minutes or seconds, and not like with the full rendering tool chain where you would have to reload the data and rebuild the database and so on. So another case is where you just want to fetch a couple of specific data. This is a part of the primary route network of Iceland, which represented a journey of us. And the thing we are mostly concerned with this day is to analyze the data interactively with the with Overpass Turbo. This is a tool designed by Martin, who was had given a short interview in the talk before. And it's, in fact, the most user-friendly way to interact with the database, to interact with the Overpass API. And I'm very happy he has done it because I have just no idea of a UI. And it would have got awful. So there will be a documentation on this. It's currently at the moment, it's not yet, it's only written in German, it's not yet written in English. But this will give a short introduction, and I think this thing has also documentation on itself, and to just give an idea how it works. You, sorry. You specify a specific, I should do it here and with the mouse. You specify a, oh no, it's not getting into. What else do we have? Things that are long and impressive. Okay. I'm not sure, because it's now, in my case, it's on the screen, but... okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, yes. Okay, so... So what you do is to see this this interface, where you can put here into the text field a text like this, for example, give me all the restaurants that belong to the area, which is left out here. For that reason, this query wouldn't work. And give me the output. Then this thing, once you press the run button here, the interface sends the requests to the Overpass API. The Overpass API is a pair of servers that's standing somewhere here in Eastern Germany in a small at a commercial provider, but it's open source, so you can have any number of copies you want. And it fetches, in fact, it fetches every minute the diffs of the OSM, so it's always up to date, up to a couple of minutes. So it gets the requests, it applies the request on the API, it applies the request on the database, and then returns the result that results from applying the request on the database. In this case, a couple of fictional symbolic results. And Overpass Turbo will then draw these results on a map for you if the results are... No. Okay. It was scheduled for 60 minutes. If it were a lightning talk, you were relatively generous, but... Sorry for the confusion. Okay, to be short on the data model, there are nodes, ways, and relations. And I assume all of you know the data model. So how many people do know how, or not how many, who knows how areas are working in detail in OpenStreetMap? Okay, that's not a clear majority. So I'll drop a couple of words on this. You should imagine, and it's an ongoing discussion since about 10 years, I think, that there is a proper data type for areas. But there is no proper data type for areas in OpenStreetMap. There are two ways how areas are usually modeled. One is to model it as a closed way. You have a way, like the usual OSM way, and then you make the first point, make the first node the same as the last node. And that way you indicate that it's an area. Depending on the other tagging, it can be already an area if it's just closed. Or you should make it explicit with setting an extra tag area equals yes. But basically, if you are trying to evaluate this, you have to search for ways that are closed and that have a certain setting of taggings if you want to get an area that is modeled as a way. And similar thing for a relay, or not similar, but there are even a second way to model areas that are as relations. The reason for that is that one very popular application for areas is to have the boundaries of the world. And the boundaries of the world are such that, beside from the sea boundaries, you have always two adjacent areas to a boundary. They are always hitting at the boundary. So all these boundary relations share the boundary share the boundary way with another. So the actually boundary of the area is defined by multiple ways, which we unfortunately do not see here, but it's not a problem because we specified that we anyway don't want it to see it. But You can see it in Overpass Turbo if it's purple, and that means that if you are going to search for areas, you have to consider both cases, basically. A couple of words about things that do not exist in the data model. There is no segregation by themes, by layers. That's a concept that has been well known to all the GIS professionals, that you sort out data in layers, and that predates even the digital age. There had been times where people have worked with large transparent layers, films. They have put one after another, and they could show a map with putting the right films on top of each other. But it turned out that OSM worked better without. Essentially, OSM tried and did work. And why? I think the main reason is everyday life notions do overlap. So a trivial example is if you would ask a question like, where could I get coffee or cake, then it could be available at bakeries, cafes, restaurants, supermarkets, depends on the time of the day. And more specific aspects, what plays a role. Similar for minor streets, it's not that clear what their primary purpose, whether they are important for the cycleway network and so should get always considered as potential or real cycleways, whether you are mostly interested in having paved areas and so on. And the third example, cache maybe. So if you would have split it out into layers, you would have pre-specialized the data, and a lot of people would always have been feeling like second-class citizens because their specific problem would be spread over several layers, telling them implicitly that their problem is less important. So I think it's one of the important things of OpenStreetMap that you that this never has taken place. So nobody has the impression that their problem is of second only of second order of importance. It's just like everybody thinks it's a little bit chaotic. But you cannot expect that there's something like layers. So what you should do is, if you really want to build an application, not just do a single query, you should search for matching tags. There are many more tools than Overpass to do this. And in fact, Overpass is not the right tool to do that. This starts on the wiki. You should always cross-check with TagInfo. TagInfo is a very important tool because it makes a statistic on how often tags are used. And so if you have a tag that's used a million times, then it's probably a tag that everybody with a little bit of experience in OpenStreetMap knows about. If you have a tag that that is used 10 times, then either you have something that is very, very, very specific and unlikely to be worth building an application on top of it, or you have something that that's just a small minority of people is proposing, so it's not helpful to pursue that road further. So it makes sense to always look for the statistics to whether a tag has really support or not. It makes even more sense to survey the corresponding data, whether it looks like the data you expect. Could easily happen. The latest thing that came around is Martin told me that you can't get sausages at a butcher in Italy because butchers do not do sausages in Italy. And that would be totally surprising for a German. We always could get sausages at the butcher. There are also a ton of other cases. Usually the most important and painful case are cycleways because too few people think about cyclists, and not so much too few mappers. Instead, there are many engaged mappers. But cycleways take very different forms in reality across different countries, including countries where it's simply not feasible to do cycling. Kate mentioned Tanzania this morning. So it may happen that actually it's not possible to do cycling if you want to make a cycling map, or it could be necessary to understand what the local community thinks is the right way to show cycle maps. And for that reason, it's never be a one-button solution. It's always you need to have an idea, to survey the corresponding data, and then to restate state initially, and then restate your data model. And really go out, tell people that for me, a cycleway is a residential road, or an unclassified road, or an explicit cycleway, or a path, unless it's explicitly marked as not accessible for bikes. And then start to rethink whether you want or do not want to use primary, secondary, tertiaries, more important streets, and so on. And really explicitly state it for you, write it down, and then check with the with the available documentation and with the corresponding data whether it makes sense or whether you are leaving out important streets. By the way, if you want to read in parallel, this chapter is already complete, the data model of OpenStreetMap. What also does not exist is normalization or categorification, like in Wikipedia categories. Well, essentially, well, it's my talk, so I can say bad things. It never worked in SQL anyway. I think I have never seen a non-trivial example of a relational database which was correctly normalized. In textbooks, probably. Not in any production system. But that's a different thing. The normalization, the idea is that you could just define very clearly which attributes can exist, which can't exist, and have a data model will usually end up with either a data model that will brush off a lot of the details, or with a data model that has the same complexity than the data, which is useless for basically that point. Because if the data model is as huge as the data, then it's not abstracting anything. So we have freedom instead of fixed notions. And we leave it up to the user. Have cycleways along the street the same name of the street or not? Both variants exist. There exists local communities which have the name of the cycleway on the street, and others do not. Does belong to a railway station, the associated bus station, the place before the station, subway station, and so on. Just imagine. Depends a little bit on the point of view. Depends also on on the railway station you may have in head as your prime example. On if it's a large one with a shopping center, shopping mall inside, then it would likely even include the parking garage into the railway station because it's important for the shopping mall or so on. And if your basic example is a small railway station that's close to a factory building or a supermarket with a detached parking space, and you would refuse to include the parking space with the railway station and so on. Because we could never have agreed on how to take these things, there are no fixed rules about all these things. Instead, a big role plays string equality. For example, between a street or all the addresses of a street, if you want to get all the addresses of a street, then you search for all objects that have this tag here, address street, set to the given name, and that will give you all the yellow objects that all have an address where the street name is the name of the street. So it's really all about string equality. It's not as surprising as you may think. Even if you were going to identifiers, you are still comparing strings. It's just you are comparing fancy strings. So we try to have state with directly human understandable strings instead. So string equality plays a central role in identifying which objects belong together in OpenStreetMap, because it's easy to check on the ground. So we start now with the real examples. I've let you wait long enough. This is the URL for the tool. And I would like to ask you to enter NVR, a name equals Heidelberg, out center into the text field, like I've done before, I've done here. Just the text is bigger here, repeated for your convenience. And if you press run, you should get you should get results. Roughly the result shown here. Now we'll have a short look of what's contributing to the query here. The first thing you should notice is do I have to press this is now it's a reminder to myself. You have to click after the run, you have to click the glasses here, because you need it to zoom on the real data. In the beginning, you will see a section of Rome, not this one, and so you need this to check on all the to zoom on all the results, because Heidelberg is quite popular. You find results for objects named Heidelberg all around the world. And so it's zooming out to almost worldwide, or exactly worldwide. So what this consists of is there are two lines which constitute so-called statements. This one, the first line with the first statement, constitutes cares to select all the data you want to see. And this one, the second line, the second statement, actually outputs them to, or outputs them back to you. So the what we have stated here is we want nodes, ways, and relations. That is why it's N for nodes, V for ways, R for relations, and we are. And we have to tell it, if we would just stop here, then we would get all the data in the world. That's not helpful. So so we have to narrow down this. And an effective way of narrowing down it is to tell it which tag to use. And this is the syntax with two brackets and the equal sign. This comes from a thing that is depending on your background is very obscure or very obvious, a thing called XPath. And it's just convention that you have these brackets and the equal sign, and before the equal sign, the name, and after the equal sign, the value. You can and should basically put always both paths in quotation marks. But Overpass will accept it without quotation marks if there are no special characters in it. It's just going to fail if there are special characters in it. We'll have an example later on. And that's the first thing. We have told it here. We want all objects that fulfill the condition that they have a name tag with value Heidelberg. And these are exactly these 72 nodes and 23 ways and 8 relations. And then we tell it outcenter. Outcenter makes only one coordinate per object. That is, in particular, if you want to peek at the data, where it is, how much it is, it's often the best choice, because you have still a decent data size. You can crash down your browser by asking for the wrong things otherwise. And so you can specify multiple values here. Okay, now a second was an example. We now want to get all the streets here, all the streets here around that are named Neuenheimer Feld. Same syntax as before. We search for a tag with name im Neuenheimer Feld, with name with key and value. For historic reasons, I had the full names of the types, node, way, and relation in the beginning, and people asked as an extra feature to get a shortcut for all three types together. And so there's nowadays an NVR. There's also had been quite obvious, but it's always the developer doesn't see the obvious thing. The people demand further that there are also NV and VRs, so I'm going to add that. I'm not sure whether it's wise to have single letters here because I want to support the query language long time, very long time. And so once one letter shortcuts are used here, I cannot use them for anything else. So I'm a little bit reluctant to that, but anyway, you can shorten relation to rel. So node has four letters. It's the longest type specification specifier, and way and rel have anyway also only three letters. So I think it's really a design choice plus some history. Okay, it's faster because it's only ways. And oh, I showed it to show the result, but the result's already here. And now we could start to ask for a second tag in parallel. You have seen we had beforehand results from all of the region here, because a lot of parts of these are named im Neuenheimer Feld, including the cycleways and footways. And now we are adding a second tag by just writing it one after another. It's just that simple. It's also borrowed from XPath, the syntax, and also the historical interface XAPI had this already. It's just it's always if you can write as many conditions as you want one after another, and they are always connected by AND. We are only finding objects that are ways and that have a name tag with value im Neuenheimer Feld and have a highway which equals to residential. So I'll come back to the case of OR a little bit later. And again, we use our center to get the result here. We could now go to a little bit that's more that looks prettier, because we know we get relatively few results, and so it's not overloading the browser if we get the full geometry. Ah, very pretty things. You can always pretty print. That is, white space doesn't play a role. The thing that controls the end of statements are the colons. So that's often helpful and to make the queries more human readable. So, as proposed, we get the instead of the 1 point per object, we now get the full weight geometry. And here these are line strings because this is a way. And how do I do it? I write geom here. The tricky thing about geom is it's already much more data with ways. For nodes, it doesn't play a role whether you have center or geom. For ways, it's already 3 to 5 times more data. That was the prime example. For relations, this one takes only some seconds. We are again asking for out center. You just ask for all the relations that have we are just asking for again for one coordinate per relation that is found. And in fact, you will find three relations if you run the query. The third one is before Africa. That's just a bug in the software. The relation does exist. The relation does not have any geometrical data. And the software does still deliver a coordinate and guesses if there's no geometrical data, the coordinate should be 0, 0. But I'll fix that. But the more important point is you should keep in mind, although we could think if we ask for France, it's only one big, but only one object. In fact, we get three. And in this case, it's not that horrible because one of the three objects has no geometry. The other one is a small hamlet in Ireland, and only one proper boundary exists. The situation is worse, for example, for Germany. If you try it out, it's horribly slow because there are three boundaries of Germany in the database. I don't know why precisely. One is without the coastal area. One is the maritime boundary, which is 12 nautical miles into the sea. And I don't know at the moment what's the third one. But the result is that if you try this and replace it with Germany, or the next one more precisely, this one is already slow with France because it's going to 4 megabyte now, so it doesn't sound much in modern times. But you should consider that your browser is going to render it, or more better, it's not necessarily rendering it, but it may just crash. And if you try this with Germany, it's even 20 megabytes. So that is the reason why I strongly encourage you to always try out with OutCenter first, because then you get an idea of how many results you have. There's also one level more course. It's called OutCount. And start this only if you have reason to assume that you can cope with the amount of data that's going to be returned. There's also that the server resources are shared amongst all the people using the servers. These are at the moment around 30 to 40,000 people a day. And so as a fair service to them, if you download too often per hour, large amounts of data, then the server may time out you for a couple of minutes, usually not more than 15 to 20 minutes. And for that reason, you should try to avoid to download much data unless you know what you do. And for that reason, I always suggest you start with OutCenter. Even if there are many examples out in the wild that do use bigger output modes. There are a couple of the output modes that are actually found in the wild. I encourage you to go to the documentation. I'm sorry for the little break. I encourage you to go to the documentation and understand what they all do. The one-liners are distinct output modes, like the one I have already mentioned, geom, center, count. There are more. For example, meter does potentially expose personal data, which would be susceptible to the GDPR. And for that reason, I'm going to change soon this towards a mode where the username and the changed number is emitted from OutMeter, and there will be a separate output mode out attribute. And this is how all these modes come to life. Afterwards, out attribute would be fine without violating GDPR, and if you want to use OutMeter, you would have a GDPR clear reason to do so. And like that. The other modes stem from the data model. What you usually have is you are dealing with ways and relations, and ways and relations do not have geometry. They have references. And so in the beginning, classically, and at outside overpass, you have to, often have to break down this to the nodes beforehand. And so what you do is you ask overpass to deliver all the nodes along with the ways into the relations and keep the references in the ways and the relations, such that the program that is finally consuming the data can again sort it so that it can work with this. Sounds a little bit complicated. It's the way how historically the things are. And many pieces of software are still that way, that they need this outdated way of having the geometry on separate nodes and doing the sorting again on itself. And for these reasons, all these output modes exist that cater for the needs of the various programs out there in the wild to be able to digest the data. There are more details in the documentation and which program needs which one. As I've mentioned, I suggest to first try without center just to get an idea where the points are. Okay, let's now get officially to... No, we have been at multiple texts, however, there's only one at the moment. Well, wrong headline, sorry. We want to filter by areas. And we now have the problem. We want to tell it here, like we have before. We search for ways that have the name Berliner Straße. And because there are many, many Berliner Straßes in Germany, it's a popular name. It's just maybe because it's Berlin is the capital of Germany. You want to reduce this only to a certain area, say Heidelberg. And to do this, we combine, as before, two filters. So we tell it here, we want all the ways that have a name, that have the name Berliner Straße, attack with the name Berliner Straße, attack with key, name, and value Berliner Straße, sorry, and that are inside an area. And now this thing must know which area to take. And it does so from keeping the result of the previous statement. You could imagine like every statement assigns to a variable named underscore its results, and this statement is able to read, this filter is able to read from underscore its results. So what we do is we ask first for all areas that have the name Heidelberg, and then we ask for all ways that have the name Berliner Straße and are within the area Heidelberg, and then we output them. That's the result. Or if you try it out, you will find answers that this isn't the result. The result is rather more. It's just telling what I have told you. This one is executed first. After this first statement, we have the area in the we have the areas. You remember, these are around 200 ways, nodes, and relations. In the result, then it seconds executes this, where this filter uses all the 200 areas that have been known before. And then this one is executed third. And this is a real result. And this is a good idea to get back to the cycle I have mentioned in the beginning of making the query, understanding the result, sharpening your model. You have to understand, to debug, which areas have caused the results just in a couple of villages north of Heidelberg. The result we want is this one here down, and these one are just stray results you basically didn't intend to get. And it turns out there's a relation with these tags, amongst others, named Heidelberg, and the type is boundary election, political election. And that's the thing that can happen in OpenStreetMap. There's just an object you never have thought of. In this case, this extra electoral boundary. In case of the German boundary, as mentioned, the extra boundary for the landmass. And in the case of France, the extra object with a so-called superrelation, where the geometry is one level of interaction farther. And we have to deal with them. First of all, we have found this by another filter. What have we done? We have again asked for all areas. Then we have asked for, this is a special filter, pivot, that uses the results to return the objects that have been responsible for creating these areas. And then finally it's output with geometry, because you want to see where the objects are. So you have three ways to come out of this problem. That's quite frequent. So I'll tell you all the three. One is to restrict the initial set of areas, which with this one, we are down to much, much less Heidelberg areas, because the boundary electorate is, we are only asking for official boundaries, administrative. Okay, I will not go into detail of this one, but the documentation is complete here. I encourage you to read it there. The second approach is to use a bounding box. That's of general interest because there are many cases where you want to use the bounding box directly. For example, if you use a wizard, you almost always end up with a bounding box. In this case, we have again taken the original areas, but we have told it here, we want, in addition, you want those ways that have a tech with key highway and a value 1 of track or residential. And a second, that are inside one of the given areas. And third, that are within this explicitly specified bounding box. It's in the order south, west, north, east. So this is the latitude, this is the longitude, this is the second latitude, which is always bigger than the first one. This is the second longitude, which is almost always bigger than the first one, except you are intentionally crossing the antimeridian. And for comparison, the same query, just without the area. So you see the bounding box is much larger to the left. And have I lost the third approach? Looks like. Sorry. And this is a very important convenience feature of Overpass Turbo, and by the way, also of JOSM and probably many other tools, that are this moustache syntax, these double curly brackets, and the special key bbox. Overpass Turbo will pass the query for whether such a substring with double curly braces and a keyword exists, and then replace it by whatever it has stored for this. In the case of bbox, it's just the bounding box of the area you actually see at the moment. So, I thank you for your attention. Do you have questions? Yes? Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for this extremely interesting introduction into the Overpass API. Can you talk a little bit about the different use cases and you know how you find, as much as you know, what kind of institutions or entities use the Overpass API, just to get some ideas about all the cool stuff that one can do?
That's a very difficult question, depending on which level you ask to. I would have to go through the log files to get an idea who's really querying the database. From that on, you don't know what the people are doing. I think obviously there's a lot of use in within the project, and that's the intent. I would say retrospectively, it's the most helpful case, because it's just you had these discussions, and one of the points was that you had the wizards that were able to deliver the data whether a problem actually exists, and that has much clamped down. You still have, unfortunately, I think it's not as obvious as it was intended, this query language, I'm sorry for that, but I think much more people can now just say, oh, they have typed this this query and post the link to it. And so in many of the discussions, whether this is a strange piece of data or so, just people just send around the link, and then other people can look at precisely the data intended and how it looks at the moment when they check it, or even if they want it at the moment when it was discovered, depending on how the query was stated. And I think that's the most important use case. And then there are a couple of requests from companies from time to time, but I don't know what they actually do with it. I personally very much the Open Level Up, the indoor editor. They at least existed at least two large scale competitors or projects with similar goals, also to present indoor with emphasis on railway stations, and so indoor mapping was a large thing where really people put up this the way they want to do tile rendering on the large scale and do this micro rendering on the small scale when you get down to a specific region where you want to tell further details. And that has been a large case, and then this family of what I have mentioned, these overlay maps, I'm not sure how popular they are really. It's not that difficult to make one. That's more like one or two. Once you have made the first three, the fourth one is probably within 5 minutes. And so there exist many, but I don't think many of them have that many users. So one is the street lamps in the introduction. The street lamps had it even made into the local newspaper, and that really had an influence, because the local city council thought that it was these historic street lamps, they are powered with gas. And they thought that it just were a very expensive piece of scrap and wanted to replace it with electric street lamps. And then an engaged local mapper came, made such an overlay map, nice dim background, and presented the lamps in different colors, showing, look, you have a real city-wide point of interest. I don't know the word, attraction. You have really a citywide attraction of historic street lamps. They form a network. They embrace all of the old town. Do you really want to scrap that? And then afterward, the local newspaper picked up the story, and in the end, the lamps are still there today. The city council managed to restore them instead of scrap them. So that's probably an extreme example, but you see how it goes. You are able, without forming a large organization, to share the duties along the way. The heavy lifting of the data is done by the overpass. The making a nice presentation is done by the enthusiastic mapper. And then the impact on the general public is more happening with politics. And it's going even that far. But I think that's another large group of use cases that exist, that people use these overlay maps. One of the three things that makes the most load are an app that that asks for the local speed limits. So I think there must be an app outside. Don't know which one or how many, or whether
I think I know which one. It's probably StreetConfeed.
Could be, but StreetComplete does usually use a helpful user agent. So why should they use a no user agent for one specific kind of queries? It doesn't make sense. So so there's probably an app outside or multiple that are asking constantly for speed limits. So I don't know whether it's real time, because I do not make any time guarantees. I do not make even a guarantee that the service is will keep up the server. Although it's funded for another 2 years by the German local chapter Foskis, and it hasn't had any downtimes in the last 2 years, so there are pretty good chances. But, well, this app uses this for high speeds. And we also have somebody who's asking for, looks like fire response teams infrastructure in Switzerland. And there are some activities going on with the Swiss fire departments using OSM. They are quite happy with it. I assume it's related to this. It's also that's very fascinating that the rescue brigades of a very high developed country resort to OSM and even resort rather to a time to a service with no time guarantees, at least as a second level. But I wouldn't suggest that in any way. I could imagine there are plans to migrate to an infrastructure that's better under their control. This has happened a couple of times. A couple of companies have asked for help how to set up their own proper instances. And of course, I don't know what they do with this, but that the purpose is most useful, overlay maps and getting all data at a certain spot and so on. But that's the range of applications. Okay, are there further questions? Yes? Yeah, just give the microphone there, please.
Yeah, hi, thanks. I was just curious, could you speak or give a little more information on the removal of the meta out?
Sorry?
You talked about removing meta out to be in compliance with the German GDPR laws, but you mentioned something else about still being able to export that information.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What's happening is there had been an extensive discussion about in OpenStreetMap about what to do about the GDPR. And one of the things is that the usernames and user IDs and changed IDs are considered personal data. You can discuss this, but they are considered that way. And that's the hole in the whole European Union, and given of the impact of the European Union, it's all worldwide, so it's not as German specific. One thing on my to-do list is to at least make it simple for people to get exactly the non-personal data. And for that reason, there's a plan to clamp down out meter to only the non-personal data. That means to skip the username and the changed ID and the user ID from the data returned, and instead have a new call out attribution that's including this data, such that in the end you can ask when you have proven that you are an OSM user, then you can still ask for all of the data, because then it's considered legitimate. The idea behind the GDPR is that if you have a good reason to use the data, then you can do so. But if you haven't, then you shouldn't do this. The basic idea is to avoid that people sit on large data piles that they have collected just in case that. And so they have forbidden explicitly that. So instead, you can have the data if you have a good reason to have this. And if you are an OSM user and want to understand another OSM user's activity, then this is always a good reason. So then you can use the out attrib call. And in the other case, you could only continue to use the out meter call. In fact, it's a non-backwards compatibility, but I would prefer that way. It's not yet done. I would prefer that way to ensure that all the examples out there in the wild still work without logging in. I don't know whether this met your question. Okay. Further questions?
Thank you for the talk in the first place. Second, I have a question concerning the backend of Overpass API.
Yeah.
And I wonder how the data of the world, the OpenStreetMap data, is represented and how you query this 60 gigabytes of data.
This depends on which level of detail I could go down. Apparently, Sorry? 30 minutes, that's quite a lot. But let's sort out a couple of things. Doing database layout is in the end that you have a probability model which data is likely to be asked for incidentally. That is, you can speed up things if you know beforehand that it's likely if you know a user is asking for A, is also asking for B. And that was the main selling point of the overpass, that I represent the data in the back end, or represent that in the geometrical order it is on the world. So I do a kind of that curve. And if I really would use 30 minutes, I would avoid to use the name R-tree because it's quite a way away from RT, but R-tree is the right idea for the ways because you cannot have the ways on one coordinate. But for nodes, it's really buckets of their local place. And for ways, we are just having a kind of tiled R-tree that turned out to be good enough. Just make tiles of a certain size. It's 600 by 400 meters about or so. It comes quite naturally from when you try to make an index from the data, then and skip the lower bits, the lower bits, then and keep the upper bits, then you get blocks of certain size quite naturally, and then I have these tiles where the ways are stored in. And so again, if you ask for something with always in Heidelberg or so, it's going through the bucket, the smallest bucket, the 600 by 400 meters, or several of them because they are all belong somewhat to Heidelberg, then to fewer but still some one level above, and some still some one level further down, and so on. That's what's basically happening, sorting the objects by their geography the best way I know, and then retrieving them blockwise. Essentially avoiding all the indexing, because really what you have different from SQL where you have expect a more or less random access patterns, where you do not expect that it's an often used case that you have two, all the objects between two index points are requested on the same time. Because it's not expected to be happening very often, this is not optimized for. So I do optimize for this because it's very frequent that people ask for give me all the data of this, or even if you have give me all the data of this with a certain search criteria. If you just get through some thousand object scanning, that's a matter of microseconds. It's so fast, it's fast enough. So it's all about these buckets in the end. You could say that it's technically that it's obsolete with the arrival of SSDs, but then again, there's still a difference between a reading and writing SSD and reading and writing from RAM, so there is still some leeway to gain by having blocks. But I have no idea how much it really is, but in the end, it's got faster with SSDs. It's still not so that somebody came around with an SQL implementation that's just so much faster that everybody would prefer that one. So I think the trick still somewhat helps.
Another question, sorry. I think last I checked on the OSM wiki, there's a few instances of overpass, and in fact, on Turbo or even in JOSM, yep. You can select which endpoint you want to hit to retrieve data. Is it true that the main overpass instance is the only one that serves up data at a point in time, attic data, or are there other?
I think for attic data, yes, it could be the case. The Russian instance came back to life recently, right. But it's not serving attic data. This is for no apparent reason. This is mostly because I have to trust. I think the Russians have remade the old system, but they had been very good at emulating the old system. I think probably in the end it's just it's a VM or it's very similar. So I need to trust really that I could put more load on the system, whether it's fast enough. And so it's not doing attic data yet. And all the other instances aren't under my direct control, so I cannot force them to do attic data. I think, yeah, it's the only instance doing attic data. And once we have the split between GDPR-relevant data and GDPR-irrelevant data, I think there's probably even more impact to restrict to GDPR-free data or GDPR non-affected data and leave out this comparably tiny piece of user data out. And for that case, even parts of the attic data, not all, because you can have a history of an object without looking at the usernames. You just have to rethink the thing. There is... It's interesting to get back a deleted object. It's interesting to get back the old geometry of an object if something has gone wrong. And for that, you don't need to know the username. And for that reason, once the cut is implemented clearly, I think it's probably even easier to have attic data. But I think no other instance has at the moment, yes.
Additionally, surrounding attic data, I think in the past few months there's been some issues with server load from users running attic queries. I noticed an instance specifically where it was possible to retrieve all roads within a given country using a geocoded area search, such as like return all roads at a point in time in Ghana. But the same query wasn't runnable or executable over Iceland for even a small subset of roads, like a residential, give me all residential highways at a point in time. So are there, do you know of the performance issues surrounding that, and are there plans to improve the infrastructure?
I know there have been performance issues. My response to this was to make the code more efficient, and that's currently in the pipeline, and it hasn't been finished before the conference, and it's not a good idea to roll out a version during a conference, so it's going live after the conference. probably with a couple of days delay. And on local tests, it's about 30 to 50% faster. And it's probably just enough relief to get the productive instances back on track. By the way, one of the productive instances isn't even under overload, the LZ4. That's pretty fine. But that's probably another discussion for how it is implemented. We wanted just to fit on the SSD, and it had already surpassed the magical 400 gigabyte limit, which is convenient for having normal data warehouse SSDs, with some security margin to the 480 that are popular. And so we started to compress things with, on the one hand, with GZIP, and on the other hand, with LZ4. And GZIP is more efficient in compressing, but LZ4 is much faster. And the LZ4 version at the moment is borderline big. It's approaching rather quickly the 400 gig limit when I run again into problems with the size of the SSDs of the server. So I'm not sure I can keep it up, and for that reason there's a second one that's still running the GZIP algorithm. That's because the database is smaller. And I hope with changing to the new version that I can update both to the LZ4 version, because it's then both quicker. So I really expect that the performance issues will stay away for a year or so once the new version is out. It will be my job to find enough things to optimize in the upcoming year to then again have enough leap ahead of the demand with the same hardware, or otherwise the hardware got better. But I expect to stay on this hardware for, I think, another 2 years or so. Okay, further questions?
So why does someone pay for a microphone, please?
So just because you mentioned hardware, just now I was curious, what kind of hardware are you using for the server?
We are using, for the production units, we are using an SSD of 480 gigabytes. On GZIP, the SSD doesn't play any role at all. The speed of the SSD on the LZ4 probably does not play a role. I think it's really demand is bigger than the demand. Just makes the server doesn't make the server full, so there is no limit really touched. And I don't know what the processor is. It's reporting that it's having 8 cores, but I think it's for real cores and it's doing hyper-threading. It definitely has none of the Spectre, however, mitigations, because it's having non-critical data, and if there's something happening, I could just throw away the installation and reset up the server. That's a matter of less than a day. Essentially, because you're going to copy 400 gigabytes of data, and if you ask about the hardware, it's a SSD, it's a 480 gigabyte SSD, and a known processor with 8 cores, including hyper-threading.
Thank you.
Okay, further questions? Okay, then I thank you for staying here. I'm sorry for the a little bit difficult talk. I have a little